Welcome to Unity of Fairfax, a positive path for spiritual living and spiritual center for education, practice, and service in Northern Virginia. We hope you find inspiration in this week's message.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to my house here in Reston. You might be saying to yourself, Russell, why are you not at the church? You're normally at the church. Well, here's the story. Late yesterday afternoon, we received a phone call that somebody with whom we had been in fairly close physical contact late in the week was feeling poorly, and over the weekend went to the doctor's office, and as a part of general diagnostics, a COVID-19 test was taken. They don't have the results yet, so out of an abundance of caution, I'm here today at my house. Mid-Hunt is recording, covered up with all kinds of PPE. And here we go, being an agile and responsive faith community that we call Unity of Fairfax. So that's the story, and hold the vision of health and healing and wholeness for everybody so we can all move through this pandemic experience quickly and effectively. But let's get back to why we're here today. I wanted to continue with the Five to Thrive series that of Sunday talks that we're doing here at Unity of Fairfax, Reston Campus, to show how we might thrive in life using our foundational principles. You might recall that on May 3rd, the first Sunday of the week of the series, we did a talk based on our spiritual life, thriving as a result of our spiritual principles and our foundational principle that the nature of God is altogether good, everywhere present. With this as our foundation, we can live life knowing that we are never separated from our Creator, that our Creator and the creative power of the universe is good, and that this goodness includes us. And if we make our lives about proving this principle, imagine how we will thrive. It is the foundation for everything. It lets us know that though we might experience something we call evil, evil in and of itself does not exist as a permanent reality. It is a temporary fact rather than an eternal truth. So I am so grateful for our first principle. We often phrase that principle as God is the only true power and presence in the universe. Then last week, we talked about our second unity principle and looked at how thriving in life is predicated upon our degree of self-awareness. How well do we know ourselves? And are we consciously working to better ourselves, or are we using our life energy to defend our weaknesses and our fears and our limited self-expression? Are we connecting with the capital S, self, that who we are? Unity's second principle phrases this as, we are individualized expressions of God. Our divine potential and spiritual essence are called the Christ. So why is it for many of us, or all of us maybe at some point in time in our lives, we don't want to go into that deep work of self-awareness or self-observation? Well, quite possibly it's because we are afraid of what we might find, afraid of what we might have to admit, that we do have fears, that we do have vulnerabilities, that we do have weaknesses, that sometimes we act out of emotion rather than thoughtfulness. You know, at some point in our lives, all of us, I think, especially this guy, just needs to be right. Yeah, we just need to be right. But the healing thing, the important thing is that when we come to understand our strengths, of which we have far more than weaknesses, let's be true about this, that when we do this work and we can acknowledge our character weaknesses, then we can let them go. When we can acknowledge our fears, we can address them appropriately. When we can recognize that there have been things about which we are ignorant, then we can learn and heal and grow and expand. It takes a lot of work. It does take a lot of work. So why is it that we are afraid often to hide our, why is it that we are afraid to share our vulnerabilities and our weaknesses? I have this theory that somewhere deep in our reptilian brain, if we acknowledge that we have a fear, a weakness, or a character defect, we're simply going to be eaten. 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 I remember when Reverend Edwin Gaines was with us recently, and she spoke about her when she began her tithing practice, and her affirmation that she took to heart was, "Creditors cannot eat me." And I laughed about that, but I thought to myself, it feels that way to us sometimes. There's almost like an interior gang mentality going on in our thoughts and in our minds that says, if we acknowledge we may not be all that, we may not be pick of the crop, we may have some weaknesses somewhere along the way, then there's something wrong with us. But that's just not true. Because our second principle, a foundational belief and teaching that we hold in Unity, is that we have this divine essence, the Christ within, the spirit of life that is at the core of who we are. So while we may have faults, we are not faults. There's a big difference between having and being. And it is okay to have a fault or character defect because it's not who and what we are. It is not the truth of who and what we are. It is a limited, time-sensitive experience that we can let go. So it is healthy for us to understand then that we live with polarities. You think about the sideways eight, the infinity symbol. We live with these polarities of understanding our humanity, understanding our divinity, understanding our humanity, understanding our divinity. This isn't a problem to solve. This is an energy in which we live. Because there is a lot about our humanity that is really swell, like good food and loving relationships and riding our bikes like we got out to do this weekend. And there's a lot about our divinity that's pretty amazing too, like deep understanding and unconditional love. And we're always working the polarity and finding ourselves somewhere on this continuum that circles back on itself. So there's nothing wrong with our humanity. There's nothing wrong with our divinity. It's just a matter of consciously integrating them and growing into who we've come here to be so that every day we might express more and more of the true light that we have all come here to be. So I want to look at our third principle today, and I want to look at the third topic in our Five to Thrive series, and that has everything to do with health. It's ironic then that I'm coming to you from my home because of a potential health issue. So I'm calling that divine order. I'm calling it a win. I'm calling it reinforcement for today's principles. I titled this talk, Early to Bed, Early to Rise. And you know this from the famous Ben Franklin quote when he said, "Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise." I suppose that goes for women as well. You know, but that's a really great place to start. Is this connection to early to bed, early to rise, what's he talking about? Ben Franklin is saying, hey everybody, you need to get some decent sleep. Scientists have shown us that without decent sleep, things start going haywire here in our minds and in our bodies. And if you have human form the same way I do, you've probably gone through some times in your life when you weren't sleeping well, when you were stressed or the baby was crying or something was going on. And you know the importance of getting good rest. Because when we get deep rest, we are able to think clearly, our bodies function better, and our minds think more clearly. So it's almost as if sleep is to the body as meditation is to the spirit. You know, both of them have this rejuvenating, restorative quality. And so I'm really grateful that in our Unity movement, we include meditation as well as prayer as a part of our spiritual practice. So I look at it, therefore, as a Unity ordained minister, my job is to put you to sleep. Wait a minute, that didn't come out right. My job is to help you sleep better by teaching meditation practices you can use at night before you go to bed rather than on Sunday morning. So please stay awake through the balance of this message. It makes me feel better. So really, when we talk about what makes a thriving life, the subject of health always comes up. And when we talk about health in spirit, and when we talk about health in mind, I think those are predicated on very similar principles. Health in spirit comes from what we believe. Health in mind comes from what we think. And to a certain extent, we've already covered these two items in this talk series so far. When we think about health in spirit, what we're really talking about is, again, what are the foundational principles that we believe, that undergird our worldview? In the scripture from Jeremiah, in the Hebrew scriptures, there is this wonderful passage in chapter 31. Thus says the Lord, the people who survived the sword found grace in the wilderness. When Israel sought for rest, the Lord appeared to him from far away and said, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. There's a comparable passage in the Christian scriptures where it simply says, God is love. So our spirits are de facto cared for by this understanding of our first principle. The nature of God is everywhere present, altogether good. And sometimes we even add, at every moment in time and space in the universe. Let's go big or go home, as we used to say when we were playing cards. Now, when we talk about a healthy mind, we remember our second unity principle. And the scripture that always comes to my mind, you see, I'm using my mind, when I think about this is from Colossians chapter 1, verse 27, Paul's letter there, in which he says, to them God chose to make known how great among the Gentiles are the riches of the glory of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. It's sometimes a mystery because we don't know it's there. I know many of us come to a church and a center like Unity, and intuitively we feel that we are not bad people. We feel that there is something that we've not been told or not learned along the way, and that's the mystery. And then when we discover the truth of this inner light, this inner spirit, aha, then it clicks. And we can say for ourselves, just as Jesus has done, the Father and I are one. The Christ is in me. We often say when we're teaching a unity class that the only difference in the quantity of Christ consciousness in Jesus in yourself is simply degree of expression. We want to spend our lives learning to access more fully the truth of who we are. And thusly, we have our second principle that reminds us that whatever we have done, whatever we have not done, whatever we have said, whatever we have not said, whatever we have thought, whatever we have not thought, we are still, in our core, the Christ incarnate. We are still, each and every one of us, an individualized expression of the awesome power and presence and majesty that God is. It's humbling to admit that. Because so many of us will spend a lot of time finding the evidence to prove why that is not the case. I bet if we spent as much time investigating why that is the case, we might be surprised. The kindnesses and the graces we've offered to others, the way in which we actually have cared for ourselves. It's a powerful and transformative teaching. And it doesn't come with arrogance. Rather, it comes with humility. Because we know that there is no one and from whom we are ultimately separated. We are living this one life, and we live it together. Well, now let's move into the third phase of thriving in health, and that's the body. This is one of the areas where Unity and the New Thoughts teachings have really made their mark, and this is where they were founded. We recall that Unity co-founder Myrtle Fillmore actually is the one who inaugurated the Unity work. Because back in the 1880s, when she was 40, she was told she had tuberculosis and probably had about 6 months to live. Both her mother and her grandmother, died when they were in their early 40s from the same condition. She and her husband, Charles Fillmore, went to a lecture led by a speaker from the Illinois Metaphysical Institute, E.B. Weeks, and heard the affirmation, I am a child of God, therefore I do not inherit sickness. This set her off on a 2-year journey of spiritual exploration that she elaborated in a little tract that was published sometime in the early part of the last century. It didn't have a date. In a little tract called How I Found Health. And I wanted to share with you some of the principles and ideas and comments that she shared in this very little tract, because it will help us to understand, all the more importantly now in this time of pandemic, how it was she found health and how it is that we might be able to access that same wisdom for ourselves and, more importantly, well, maybe not more importantly, but just as importantly, share it with others. She wrote, "I made what seems to me a discovery. I was very sick. I had all the ills of mind and body that I could bear." And she was, again, writing this about her experience in the 1880s. "Medicine and doctors ceased to give me relief, and I was in despair." I think we should add some drama. "I was in despair until I found practical Christianity." This term, practical Christianity, means there is a practice, something to do in the exercise of our faith. Again, because faith is something that we have, it is also something we do. So she wanted something she could do to empower herself. She said, "I affirm my beliefs and I was healed." And what were those beliefs? That she was a child of the universe, that she was created in the image and likeness of God, and that there was life flowing through her abundantly. "I did most of the healing myself because I wanted the understanding for future use." She did the healing herself, most of it. And the usage of the word "most" indicates to me that somewhere along the line, she had help. She had partners in wholeness. But however, she took primary responsibility for her health for herself. And I think it's a really important reminder to us that even though now we have such awesome care and treatments and medications galore, we're still in charge. We are still in charge. I sometimes tell individuals, it might be helpful when you go to see your medical care teams for whatever the reason, consider them as contractors. They work for you, not you work for them. And sometimes people are surprised to hear that. But it is just another way of saying we are all responsible for taking care of ourselves. So let's enlist the help of coaches, mentors, doctors, nurses, and anybody else who will help us maintain our goals. And this is what she calls her great discovery. It's really juicy stuff. "I was thinking about life, life with a capital L. Life is everywhere," she says, "in animals and people. Then why doesn't the life in the animal make a body like a human's?" I ask. Then I thought, the animal does not have as much sense as a human. I have dogs. I can verify this is true. Ah, intelligence, capital I intelligence, as well as capital L life, is needed to make a body. And here's the key to my discovery, she writes. Life has to be guided by intelligence in making all forms. The same law works in my own life. Life, capital L, life, is simply a form of energy, and it has to be directed and guided in a person's body by his or her intelligence. And how do we communicate intelligence? By thinking and talking, of course. Then it flashed upon me that I might just talk to the life in every part of my body and have it do just what I wanted. I began to teach my body and got marvelous results. She started speaking to her life centers and to her body. And this is how she did it. And she said, "And I went to all the life centers in my body and spoke words of truth to them, words of strength and power. I asked their forgiveness for the foolish, ignorant course I had pursued in the past, and when I had condemned them and called them weak and inefficient and diseased." Wow, that's big stuff. I don't know about you, but there have been more times than I care to count when I stood in front of the mirror and said something like, "Oh my God, what have you done?" That's not going to help make anything better. Not at all. She said she asked forgiveness for what she had said to her body and what she had courses of actions she had pursued. Well, sure, all of us, okay, maybe I'm generalizing, have made decisions along the way that chances are were not the best decisions we could have made. But she asked forgiveness. In other words, she said, I'm willing to let it go. I did not become discouraged at their being slow to wake up, but I kept right on, both silently aloud, declaring words of truth until the organs responded. You see, we would learn a lot from her. We live in instant gratification culture. We have a microwave oven. We have our instant Netflix. We have all of our instant gratification things. What she's saying is, give it time. Give it time. Let your body learn to trust you again in the decisions you're making. And she said, neither did I forget to tell them, my body parts, that they were free, unlimited spirit. I told them that they were no longer in bondage to the carnal mind, that they were not corruptible flesh, but centers of life and energy omnipresent. Wow. How challenging is that for us sometimes? Especially in these days, in this time, when we hear so much news about illness. She is giving us the reminder that we are called upon to hold the high watch, to give it time, to use intelligence and life. And I would say not only for ourselves, because she said she wanted to do this work so she could share it. Let us do the same. Let us praise the life that is active in the bodies, in the spirits, in the minds of everybody with whom we share this earth. She also added, I did not let any worried or anxious thoughts into my mind, and I stopped speaking gossipy, frivolous, petulant, angry words. Well, easy for you to say, sister, but important to say as well. And I would say that this call to watch our words is very important, regardless of whether we're dealing with health or world situations. It is very important that we take these keys to heart. And these keys that she elaborated in this message, this little short tract, could be self-awareness, self-responsibility, making a conscious decision to practice the practices and engage in the actions that would lead to health and wellness, to give it time and not feel discouraged, to watch the words she was using and the thoughts she was saying. She took action and she engaged forgiveness as a way of letting go the errors of the past, letting go the errors of past thoughts, not only past actions. And the other thing, interestingly enough, she and her husband became vegetarians. They found that that was a course of action that they wanted to take to live life and have it abundantly and thrive. In all of this, we see an example of unity's third principle. We create our reality through the thoughts we hold in consciousness. She created the reality of health through her thinking, and I would also add, through her feeling and through her actions. But she took charge and responsibility. Now, she may not have been able to control everything in her surroundings, but she could control her own reaction and to her own response. And that's where the power lies. If we want to create vibrant, living, healthy bodies and minds and spirits, then it is incumbent upon us to use our intelligence to shift and move our life energy so that we might create the experience of thriving that we want. We are charged now to do thorough research into all the treatments and diets and exercises and everything that's available to us. And how blessed are we that we have this rich basket of opportunities that they didn't have? And I think the reason why we have so many opportunities and tools and techniques at our disposal is that through the work of collective consciousness, humanity has created all these opportunities so that we might lean into and find what will work for us to help us thrive. There's no one size fits all to health. It is, though, there is one principle, though, and one power, and we can use it. That was her point. Use the power. Use your mind, your thoughts, and create the experience you want. Give it time and be patient. You know, I'm sitting here in my living room today thinking, my goodness gracious, I would rather be at the church giving this message to you there. But I'm willing to use my mind and use my wisdom and use my life energy to create the experience I want. And today the experience is mindfully being aware of risks and challenges, but also seeing this as an opportunity for good, an opportunity for me to lean into and model and demonstrate what I believe will lead to health and wellness for me and for everyone. Each one of us has that opportunity. So today I invite you to praise the life in your body, to praise the intellect in your mind, and to use these things for good. I thank you, and the world thanks you. Peace be with you, and namaste.
Thank you for tuning into Unity of Fairfax podcast. You're welcome to join us live in Oakton, Virginia, every Sunday at 9 and 11 a.m., or view our live stream services from our website at unityoffairfax.org. We appreciate your donations to support this podcast to make our message of positive, practical spirituality more accessible to all. See you next time.